Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucksters, what the fuckadelics? And that's it for today. How are you doing? How are you? Mark Maron here. It's my show. This is WTF, the podcast. Welcome. Thanks for being here. Got a couple of guests, I think, today. Yeah, Phil Hendry, going to stop by for a few minutes. And then after that, Tommy Davidson from In Living Color, as you'll recall, and the stand-up stage will be with us here in the garage to chat about this and that. God, how are we all going to recover from that Terry Gross episode? Oh my God. That was the top of the mountain there. But we keep moving. We keep doing it. Today's Memorial Day. I don't know what you're up to, but I hope you're not burning yourself on a grill situation. I hope you're having a nice outing, whatever that may be. Don't get too shit-faced. Don't burn yourself in a grill situation. Don't blow up a propane tank. Try not to drive when you're all fucked up. All right, be nice to your family. And, give a little thanks to those who died in service of our country is really the intent of it all, isn't it? But, you know, I know some of you, it's just a day off. Why not get some meat out? Can I push my dates? Because I don't think I've told you enough that I've added dates to the Marination Tour. Cleveland, Ohio on June 5th at the Playhouse Square. The Vic Theater in Chicago, June 6th, and early and late show. And I will be taping my comedy special. I'll be taping an hour at the Vic in Chicago, June 6th. Both shows. Come be part of that. And then on June 7th, you can go to Minneapolis at the Pantages Theater in Minneapolis and hear me talk about how the special went. That should be a fun show. June 25th, after a little bit of a break there, you can take a vacation if you don't mind. The Capitol Theater in Port Chester, New York. June 26th, I'll be at the Bam Howard Opera House in Brooklyn, New York. June 27th, the Paramount Theater, Huntington, New York. June 28th, Count Basie Theater, Red Bank, New Jersey. July 10th, Aladdin Theater in Portland, Oregon. July 11th, Revolution Hall, Portland, Oregon. July 24th, Boulder Theater, Boulder, Colorado. And July 25th, Paramount Theater, Denver, Colorado. You got that? Go to WTFpod.com/calendar and check that shit out, because I'm doing it. This is it. This is the last run for a little while, probably. God damn, the skunk. You know, it's weird with skunk. You know, like, it smells really bad, but you get used to it, and then you start to think it smells good, right? Now, let's focus here. The show, obviously, this week, Thursday night, 10 p.m., Maron on IFC. The first two episodes have been very well received. This one, coming up, a little gnarly. It's a little gnarly. I will tell you that. I wrote it. I directed it. It's called X-Pod. It's about the fiction of me having my ex-wife on my podcast. Yeah, and we did flashbacks. So it was something, man. I was happy to have Phil Hendry drop by. Phil Hendry, you might recognize his voice. You might know him from the Radio Cowboy episode in the second season of Maron. He's also a genius on the radio, a pioneer. You can also hear his show at the relaunched PhilHendryShow.com. He just wanted to chat, say hi. alert the world that they relaunched his website. So I said, sure, come over, Phil. Come over, Phil. Let's talk. Let's talk to Phil Henry. Phil Henry back.
What's up?
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Yeah? Just like I said, I was listening to the guys next door either putting on a roof or a tar or something. And it reminded me of my days when I used to work in construction. The guys that were the roofing guys, they use roofing tar, and I believe that there's something in there. I think there's like crack or it's like meth or something that those guys just start dancing on the roof at like 10 a.m. and
maybe it's the heat, man.
It could have been the heat.
The heat.
Yeah.
So our episode of Marin last year got a lot of great feedback.
There was a lot of
Did you get a lot of great feedback?
Well, I got people who saw it. I mean, radio folks saw it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And my sense is that they thought it was kind of right on.
It was totally right on. Talent thought it was right on.
Right.
And the management people are still, as you know, they're
the same.
Talk about people in denial.
Right.
Yeah, radio management.
You talk to radio management?
I talk to them as long as they want to talk to me. And
but I mean, like, about that show?
I think in passing on Twitter, we'll have there'll be a little exchange, and then I'll realize one of the people I was talking to dropped off.
You know?
It's the management guy.
The general manager guy.
I think the thing about that, and I tell people this, because I said, well, Mark was in radio, so you have the experience.
A little bit. I don't claim too much experience, but I was there.
You had
there.
Enough, yeah. man. You yeah. were with a company,
right.
and the company was bad.
yeah.
And so...
how many times do you need to have that experience?
You know, like, not every job.
yeah.
You know, that's what it was for me. And, I say to people that radio is self-destructing, and the reason is not the talent. It used to be the talent. They always wanted to give it to us. They want to say, well, if you guys did this, that. No, it's the brain trust, it's the executives, it's the industry itself. They have destroyed our business, and now it's not even our business. I mean, what is it, man?
I don't know what it is.
It's embarrassing.
A little bit.
It's embarrassing to have given 40 years of my life to what, you know?
Well, there's a transition happening, but it seems like the real talent, the people, they're still hanging on to those morning parts and those afternoon parts, they're still plugging along.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I just did the Brother Weeze's show.
Is Weeze still pulling down some dollars?
It.
Is he pulling some
guess
bank?
He, well, they got him doing like 9 hours almost.
You're
like
kidding.
It's like I think his show goes from like 6 till noon.
Jesus.
Like he'll do 4 hours live and then they run the first two again.
Oh, I got it.
It's a half a day of programming they got that old dude doing. It's
4 hours. Then he gets to take a nap. Then they got him back in there again live.
You know that guy?
I know of Weeze.
Right?
Long time Buffalo, Rochester guy, right?
Rochester,
Long time upstate New York guy.
But he's got all those pictures on the wall of, you know, the rock days and the dudes that used to come through. And, you know, they asked him to MC one of the Woodstocks, you know, the new Woodstock.
I believe it, man. I mean, those were the days, I mean, like that poster right there.
The Gimme Shelter poster?
Who did Sonny Barger call when he needed to have his voice heard? KSAN. Barger was there the next day saying, you guys got this all wrong. Mick Jagger's a scumbag. My guys got set up.
The 60s, I missed it. I missed it, Phil.
Well,
all I got was the remainder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got the music. I got the stories, the mythology.
You got the Limp Bizkit Woodstock.
Sure, man. I didn't go to that. But like, when I look back at my life, these are my guys. But I missed all the music that I'm into. I kind of missed.
You're into vinyl, man.
I got a lot of records.
That's unreal.
A lot of records happening.
Do you put the needle on those vinyls?
I do. I pick it up and I put the needle right on there.
And you do that because of the experience to do it, or you like the way it sounds?
I grew up with it. I like the equipment that
it's
comes
awesome.
With the idea.
It is awesome.
I don't like to know that I'm part of a trend, but I'd like to think that I was ahead of it a little bit. I don't know if I was. But I do like the experience of it, and as I get older, and I have less to do. I don't have children. I don't have a wife. There's something about kind of fetishizing, ritualizing an activity that's pleasurable. You know, I can sit down, I can put a record, I can listen to the high-end speakers
There is a ritual to it, man, because I remember buying records, you know, when I was like 13. The first record I ever bought was Out of Our Heads, The Stones, and I
have that one.
You go home, you take that wrapping off, you put the record on, and you spend the next hour or
looking
two
at that picture,
reading the liner notes.
Yeah.
They used to have liner notes.
Yeah.
And they were written by like legitimate cats like Ralph Gleason and Neil Hefti and all these guys. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And some records sound better than others. I do, but you know, to sit down and do it.
Yeah.
To sit down and listen to it. And I got some nice equipment that I like looking at. You know, some people buy cars.
Yeah.
You know, I bought some nice stereo equipment and I like looking at it. So you did some more acting?
I did, well, F is for Family. We just finished with Bill Burr. And
how many did you do?
We did all of them, six, and Laura Dern is in it, and Bill Burr is in it. And
that's your nice show?
Mo Collins. That's Bill's. It's an animated show. It's based upon, I probably am talking way out of school. Producers are going to just,
when's it start?
Hank burn me an effigy. I have no, next season. You figure the year time it takes for animation, probably sometime in the spring.
For what network?
For Netflix.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. You're on Netflix now, right?
I am. Yeah, the first two seasons of Marin and my special is up there.
Sweet.
Well, that's great, man.
Sweet, yeah.
Now, what's going on with the Phil Hendry Empire?
The Phil Hendry Empire is, like the Incans, doing well, just waiting for the Spanish to arrive. No, we're doing fine.
You forecasted the end of the world.
Exactly.
And now it's only a matter before I'm conquered.
Yeah, exactly. We're taking the hearts out of virgins and having fun and frolicking through the forest. But there is a ship out there on the horizon with sails and shit, and there's a guy with a helmet. And
He's coming. It's coming for all of us.
Yeah. He says all he wants is the weed, but I'm sure there's more. But what we're doing is we've got a pilot that we're going to shoot in the summertime or early fall, which is a satire that I'm really excited about. I'd love to tell you more, but you know how this town is.
Sure.
And we also are
a TV pilot.
Okay. Yeah, it's a satire based upon television.
Great.
And and we've got our website, which is philhendryshow.com.
And did you what happened?
We've upgraded the website.
But
we've got a real cool website now, which is, a lot of it was inspired by you. And I'll tell you this, I said to my guys, if you go to Mark's page, there's a big button there. It says, here's the show.
Yeah, play.
I said, that's what you do. This is what it is. It's not a world of techno geeks that are all going to be excited about hitting 58 links.
Yeah.
You know? And they go, oh, okay. So we have not as big as the button on your page, but we've got at least a button. You know.
Yeah. I want my older listeners to know exactly what's happening.
How you do it. Yeah. You know, here
play.
It is.
Play.
And if you want another kind of a show, play that one.
Yeah.
And so we're just doing things. Like, we have a couple of extra, what I call bells and whistles, which is a chat feature, which my fans seem to like to do. They like to get in there and get into fist fights over the show.
That's the internet. Fuck you. No, fuck you.
Exactly. That's it, man.
How many shows have you got in the archive?
We got 20,000 hours, man, of shows. 20,000 hours, yeah. And what we've done is we've opened up 30. I know you got 100 or so free out there.
50
free.
Always at all times.
So we have 30, mm-hmm. And then they go behind the paywall. And I figure that's a little bit better than 7. We only had 7 out there for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, how cheap do you want to be, Hendry, you know?
Yeah.
So we threw that out there, and really, I got to tell you something, Mark. That's what pays the bills, really, is the digital world. That's what's paying the bills for us. It's giving us a really good living. And thank God.
You made the adaption. Well, you adapted.
And now all these cats.
You evolved.
All these radio guys are going to be, hey, Phil, how'd you do it, huh?
Yeah.
I said, because I had to, man, you know.
You know, a lot of those guys, it's weird because I've seen it happen. It's like, you get comfortable being coddled. You get comfortable, you know, and then you start to realize, this shit is shrinking up. But a lot of them just still can't leave. Their salaries are cut, or they're not doing what they used to, or they get moved around. They're just terrified because for, 30 years, they've been taken care of.
Yeah, because they're not, I don't think, and this is the difference between a guy like you and those guys or me. We think like producers. We know, okay, here's how I want to do this. Here are the buttons I want to push. Here's how I want my studio to be. In fact, here's the business model I want to work. And they were not really ever broadcasted, I don't think. I think they were like lawyers that got a talk show, and then the money got really good.
But it's sort of sad, though, some of them who are real, also there's that fear. You're in the game for a long time, and you want to make the jump. Yeah. And I think in your heart, you really don't know how many listeners you really have. And if you make the jump,
you're afraid that...
fuck yes, you're afraid. I mean, Arbitron books, you can spin that shit into anything.
Dude, that was
it's torture. A lie.
Yeah,
it's always been a lie. Mm-hmm. So to sort of be this guy, the morning guy and wherever, and be all right, fuck it, I'm leaving, I'm doing a podcast. Yeah. And you're like, I'm only getting 1,500 downloads.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Wait a minute, how am I going to make a living of that? Right. The advertisers?
And also, how's your ego going to, especially a radio guy, how are you going to take that hit?
Yeah. You got to be a workman. You have to be a journeyman. Have to just, okay, let's, it's start. I'm starting
desperation.
All over again. Yeah, I'm starting all over again. Right. How did you do it, man? He's like, well, I want to do this thing. And
No choice.
Next thing you know, you got an audience. Yeah. And I think for us, we just charged a subscription. So we knew right away how much bread we were making.
And you had this amazing archive that was yours.
We had the archive that that belonged to us. And I will thank one suit, Craig Kitchen of Clear Channel, who gave us, basically said, I'm going to give you guys the archive. I'm going to work it so that we get it from Clear Channel and give it to you, which was great.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's the one good suit.
I'm telling because
since then, The one good suit. That's got to be the title of a book.
That's the name of a book, or it's the name of a play or an opera.
Yeah, the one good suit.
But I'll tell you this, since then, Clear Channel ain't given shit away, man. They are holding on to everything.
Sure, they have to for their big garage sale.
For their big garage. When's that going to happen, you think?
I don't know. I don't know how it looks. Like, I have a hard time paying attention to things.
Well, you don't have to, man.
I guess.
And I only do because I'm sadistic, you know? I mean, we're out of the...
You want the schadenfreude of seeing the thing topple.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, and
fuck you. I outlived you.
Yeah, and I think what's happened is this is a talent-friendly atmosphere now. We start our own businesses. We do our own thing. The guy I was telling you about, who will remain unmentioned before, said, you know, basically we had this guy and then he split because he started his own network. When it's in radio, that didn't happen. Cats weren't leaving and starting their own radio station.
Right.
But now you can leave and say, thank you very much, but I got it from here.
And, you definitely feel like there is a shift happening. And I think they all know it. And I think that's one of the reasons, like, you know, the guy we were talking about, he's like, you know, I want to be the power on top of that. I want to wrangle this. Like, there's the old guard that's sort of like the old guard with the money. And this, they're like, we can make this ours.
And they wrangle that. Yeah.
But but they can't. Someone will figure something out, but it's not going to be that. It's not going to be one dude. There's going to be a platform of some kind. Whoever gets in the cars, you know, in the most efficient way, that's it.
Yeah.
Then it's done.
And for me, if anybody's listening, it's just a touch screen. So you got Marc Maron and you got all these shows lined up.
Yeah.
And you just punch the button as you're driving in your car to all the little show. You can select maybe 100 buttons there, but they're all got the names of the shows that you love.
You just scroll.
Scrolling through, man. Sure. And that's where it's at. And I think
and by that time, your car will be driving itself. So,
well,
you know,
let's hope it doesn't take that long, you know, but close.
Pretty close.
But right now, I pulled up, man, I've got my iPhone and I'm listening to iTunes. I mean,
well, that's easy.
Tune
just
in.
Run it right into the plug. And you can do it through Bluetooth.
Dude,
it's going to.
I've gotten hooked on Premier League soccer out of Britain. So now every day I'm listening to these freaking British talk sports shows.
Oh, that's exciting.
I'm listening to these cats out of London. They're like, right, what would you say, Chelsea? Chelsea's not what did. The phone is on. And I understand them, you know.
You've figured out the rhythms and the slang.
Yeah, there's two languages I really don't understand. Yeah. Scottish English and Jamaican English. Both of those guys, forget it.
Scottish English is rough.
Those dudes that's where my people are from. And
it's hard, man.
You know, I went to Jamaica with my girlfriend. Her people are from Jamaica.
Yeah.
She understood every word.
Yeah. Oh,
I go to Scotland, forget it.
Nothing.
Yeah, they're going to the hardware party. You're going to find it? Huh? Yeah, I'm going to go there. You don't tell me something. That is Peter Botild. Oh, I forget it, man. I'm dangling there from the Glasgow airport thing.
It's
heavy,
man. Yeah, Scotland's heavy. Did you go to Glasgow?
I got,
it's an incredible city.
Freaking great, man.
Yeah,
it's just great.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's so gorgeous.
It's insane, too.
Crazy castles and stuff.
Castles and profoundly drunk people on the weekends. I've talked about it before.
Profoundly drunk.
Like, I've never seen public drunkenness. It just sort of like, and no one's doing anything about it. It's like, there's just another Saturday night. Casualties on the sidewalk.
San Francisco's not a whole lot different.
Denver's the way. Now with legal pot and the altitude and
seriously,
the booze on the Denver downtown on the weekend, it's like people are going down.
A little bit hooked by The Onion this weekend, where something along the lines of Robert Durst is overheard on the microphone that they haven't removed for 3 years, that he's going to kill those filmmakers as soon as he finds them. I read this and I'm like, what? Wait a second, it's The Onion, man.
Yeah, that was a hell of a thing. Yeah, I watched it all back to back. I didn't do it. I just sat down and did it.
Yep.
And
I got to show my girlfriend because she's completely.
There's part of me believes. Like most of them, that he wanted to be caught.
You saw him practice. That's what a psychopath does. They don't know how to behave as a normal human,
but
they practice.
I saw that, but also what became like in the last part
when he knew the mic was live.
I guess he might have. I don't know. He is old, but he wasn't rehearsing. He was talking to another voice in his head. That was the most revealing thing at the very end.
Okay,
he was like, we're caught.
We're caught.
Like there was a dialogue going, and that was where you're like, no, he's like. Not just your run-of-the-mill psychopath.
A psychotic is talking to heads, voices. A psychopath is a guy who knows exactly what is sane and what isn't and just chooses to act against...
Well, he's got no conscience, no conscience, empathy.
Yeah,
and we walk among them.
Yeah, we sure as hell do.
Psychotics usually reveal themselves at some point.
They're usually the guy...
Some drastic action.
They're yelling at a sign, you know, and thank you. Although nowadays with freaking Bluetooth, forget it.
Sure. We're all psychopaths.
Yeah, we all look like it, yeah.
Well, Phil, what's the website?
Huh? The website.
Oh, wait, what were you saying?
I said you're a great man.
Well, thank you, man.
This guy's my inspiration, Mark Maron, and that's why we do have philhenryshow.com.
Beautiful.
Backstage pass it, Jack.
Beautiful. Beautiful, man.
You're a good man.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming.
Thanks.
It's always good to see you.
Thanks for having me, man. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Tommy Davidson's been around a long time. He's got a history in this business. He was on one of the revolutionary sketch shows, and I tried to get him in here. A while back, it didn't work out, and I got him in here today. I'm going to pester him about some stuff, see if we can get some banter going, okay? Tommy Davidson's on tour right now. You can see him Sunday at Helium in Buffalo. Then in June, he's got dates in Houston and Austin, Texas. Go to TommyCat.net for dates and venues. Before I get into this talk, the Baltimore riots were still happening, so that's why we were talking about it like it was in the present. All right, now you know that. Now we can get to it. Some people hate fucking cats.
To me, the people that hate cats are just not used to wisdom.
Yeah.
They're just not used to just kind of dealing with things.
Right. That's true. Cats are meditative.
Yeah. They gauge you.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people can't handle that. They're like, how are you judging me?
Yeah.
Don't.
And they also kind of like, they do their own thing based on what you want.
Yeah.
And sometimes they ask for what they want.
Yeah.
Dogs don't. Dogs say, what do you want me to do?
Right.
Cats just kind of ask for what they want. They just kind of look at things.
Uh-huh.
Look at you. And go, it's up to you. This food is gone. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Your call. I can't remember. Like, I know we must have met at some point. Because I go back to, like, I was at the Comedy Store back in the mid-80s. And I think I ran into you on the road somewhere.
I am sure.
50, how old? You were in the same age,
51.
Right? Yeah, I'm 51.
Yeah, we remember.
How HR, the fuck?
Remember HR Puffer stuff?
Yeah, sure.
I remember the Bananas Blitz.
Yeah, I remember the Bananas
Blitz. Funky Phantom.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know that.
Funky Phantom.
A little unclear on
Hanna-Barbera.
That.
Yeah, it was around when the Groovy Ghoulies.
Oh, yeah? I remember
the Groovy Ghoulies.
It wasn't Banana Splits.
The Banana Splits, yeah, the stuffed animals on the roller
coaster. Yeah.
Playing guitars.
Yeah. Where'd you grow up?
Maryland.
Really?
Silver Spring, yeah.
I don't know where that is. It's close to what?
D.C.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
One brother, one sister. My brother passed away, still with me. Uh-huh. And one sister that still lives in D.C.
And where were you born?
Mississippi.
Yeah.
Mississippi.
How'd you get from there to there?
I was abandoned and then adopted by a white woman and brought to Colorado. She then moved to Washington, D.C.
You were abandoned, like left on a doorstep? Or?
Like left in the trash.
No.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah. Well, it was a happy day for me.
Yeah.
It could have been sad.
Yeah.
That tale has turned out happy so far.
Well, yeah, but how did you get found? Do you know that part of the story?
Yeah. She was actually working with my natural mother about a year before.
Your adoptive mother?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Working with her in the civil rights movement down there in Greenville, Mississippi.
Yeah.
Immunizing kids and just trying to be a part of the movement
that
was going on.
Right.
And had left there
mm-hmm.
and came back to visit.
Okay.
And asked about her. They said she left.
Yeah.
She took her two older kids, but I think she left her youngest child at a house that is on such a street. So she goes to the house, you know, and for some reason she's curious. And it's a drug house and kids hanging out doing drugs. And she goes to walk out. There's a pile of trash on the side of the house.
Yeah.
She says something told her to look behind this big giant tire that was with all this trash.
Yeah.
She saw my foot.
Really?
Out of the pile.
No kidding.
And she dug the trash out, and there I was. And
how old were you?
Almost two.
Wow.
And I was technically, I think, dead. Took me to the hospital, 2 weeks, nursed me back. And I couldn't find the mom. She hustled up a legal right to take me in, and then later on adopted me.
That's insane.
I know.
And then she had two other kids?
She had them currently.
Yeah.
So one is a month older than me. One was 3 years older than me.
Oh, my God. And what did
And they're white.
So. And what did she do?
She actually passed away. She was a union worker.
Mm-hmm.
all her life for workers' rights, for housing and urban development, anything else that came up.
And was she married? She have a...
She did eventually get married, but I was an adult by then.
Oh, that's a wild...
Single mom in the 70s.
With three kids.
Women's lib.
Yeah.
Women's lib, which means the kids do all the cleaning.
Uh-huh.
You know.
But how did that affect you? I mean, did you ask questions? When did you learn about...
I didn't have to.
Yeah.
Got my ass kicked as soon as we got in D.C. Moved into Washington, D.C. during the riots in 68.
Yeah.
How coincidental that that's happening now.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I can't fucking believe it.
Moved.
Man.
I can.
Yeah.
A fool would know what happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. You take enough food for 20 people in a room full of 100 people for a week.
Yeah.
Only a fool's not going to know what's going to happen.
Right. Right. So, yeah. I mean, I guess this has been waiting to happen.
Baltimore actually, you know, was historically one of the notorious slaving cities.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. During the slave mm-hmm. Uniquely to Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
was when the laws, the international laws were passed on importing African slaves.
Yeah.
In order for America to continue to get them, they opened up breeding farms. And the breeding farms actually were, the most of them were located in the Baltimore area.
Breeding black people.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I never heard that.
Something. And the highest rate of sexual abuse and incest among African Americans is in that area.
Huh.
Isn't that something?
What do you make of that?
That cause and effect is real.
Yeah. And now when you moved there, so you're with basically a white mom, two white siblings, and you.
In a black neighborhood.
Yeah, in a black neighborhood.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So.
Let the games begin. And we're underway in Super Bowl 25, you know.
And what happened? I mean, so your mom wanted to live in a black neighborhood.
Right away. She was kind of got a job there.
Okay.
A government job.
Yeah.
At HUD.
Yeah.
A government job, you know, at another agency, you know, because that's a secretary town, really.
Yeah.
So a lot of women, single women,
uh-huh.
moving there during the 60s.
Uh-huh.
Single women.
Uh-huh.
For their careers and to
right.
raise their kids.
Sure.
And she was one of them.
Yeah.
But we coincidentally moved there during the riots in 68.
So it was a mess.
Tanks.
Yeah.
Tear gas. Me and my sister on the ground.
Really?
Yeah. My brother.
Yeah.
My brother looks like David Cassidy.
Oh, really?
But blonde, and my sister looks like Cindy Brady.
Uh-huh.
And here I am, Rodney Allen Rippey, you know?
Yeah.
Just using the 70s reference.
Right.
And they beat the shit out of us every day. And we're calling us white cracker, and calling me white cracker lover.
Uh-huh.
And I actually like graham crackers.
Yeah.
So I was like, what is this?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I actually literally thought, you know.
How old are you? Like, what,
five.
When you started to remember this
five.
Shit.
Five.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah, and so it's like, I don't even like white crackers.
Yeah.
Like, I like graham crackers.
You didn't quite,
sweet.
You didn't quite know what they were
They're
saying.
Sweet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I finally asked my mom after getting my ass beat. So, finally, I asked my mom, what's a white cracker? She said, that's what people call people our color.
Right.
That are your color.
Right.
And they don't like them.
And yeah.
I was like, color? I'm brown.
Yeah.
She said, well, they're black people and we're white people. I said, no, you're brown. Like, the crayon is brown.
Right.
And you guys are like peach.
Right.
In the crayons.
Yeah.
And I said, well, people can be, aren't we the same? I thought, because I grew up in Wyoming and Colorado on like farms and.
Oh, that's where you started?
Mountains. And,
so she got you and then took you to Colorado
right.
first?
Right.
What was she doing there?
She was, her and her husband at the time taught at Fort Collins in the university over there.
Well, how old were you then when you were there?
Anywhere from 3 to 5.
And then Wyoming?
Wyoming was where she was from, so we went there often.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so I grew up in mountains and
right.
streams.
Yeah. Significantly white areas.
Significantly middle America.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, all the Indians were dead by then.
Few around.
So, yeah, few around.
Mm-hmm.
So
by the time you got to D.C., you were like 7 or 5 or 6?
Five.
Okay, so you had memories and everything
yeah.
else.
Oh, yeah. So I'm going, what the hell? And it blew me away because
yeah.
I thought, people were like animals. I thought they were born like animals. Like a cat could have a black cat, a white cat,
sure,
brown cat, and a speckled one
yeah.
in one litter. And a horse, you could have a black horse and actually have a brown horse.
Yeah.
So I thought people were born like that.
Right.
I thought it was a brown one.
Right. And that it didn't make any difference.
Right.
Yeah.
And it did.
Yeah.
So, and then we moved to the suburbs to run away from that. And then it's the first time I heard the word nigger because grown white men were calling me nigger and get the little nigger and chasing me home.
In the suburbs.
In Wheaton, Maryland, yeah. And I barely got home with my life. People starting fires on our porch. And
really?
Yeah, nigga it is, nigga it is. It was in 68, 69.
Was that a white neighborhood?
Yeah, all white. And I asked, what is a nigger? And she said, that's what people our color call people your color when they don't like them.
Mm.
And I didn't like that at all.
That was the explanation.
And I said, oh, that's not good. At five, my head exploded. Like, there was just like a nuclear reaction. Like, what is this place called Earth?
Right. You know? Right. Yeah.
Then I moved. I got it. The end of the identity crisis was when we moved to an integrated neighborhood.
Yeah.
Which is rare at the time.
Where's that at?
Silver Spring, Maryland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, on the DC line.
Yeah.
And some white kids did chase me down the railroad tracks.
Uh huh.
We were playing on, and some black kids were standing at the end of the tracks, and the white kids ran the other way, and I ran behind the black kids, and I've been black ever since.
that was the beginning of blackness.
Well, then I knew. Okay, yeah. Oh, I'm on this side. It's a good side, you know?
But there was never, you never lashed out against your own family.
No.
It was
only in not understanding and confusion.
Yeah.
You know, because they gave me just what a human being needs, love,
mm-hmm.
and I thought I needed to get something from one color or the other.
Yeah, when you grew.
Right, like exactly. And love is given, you know, an undetermined amount by the individual.
Right. But like there
regardless
was
of color.
There was a point where you're like, you know, I'm going to be black
side, now. Yeah, what side am I going to be on? Am I black? You know. And so I am.
So did it get tense with your brother and sister?
No, never. Never. Really? Oh, we're like the Brady Bunch.
Right.
We were like the Partridge family, Swiss family, Robinson.
So you could go home to that, but out in the world.
Yeah, we were together, man. Yeah. We were the band of brothers.
Yeah.
And, you know, Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
You know, my household was like the movie Billy Jack. You know, that was our...
commune?
Motto.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a commune in Colorado because their father was weed-smoking hippie. So we'd go back there and stay, and that's not no place for a seven-year-old to hang out at a commune.
Right.
70.
Yeah.
My mom was conservative and working in an office.
And her folks were
And her ex-husband was a hippie in a commune.
Okay.
So we ended up at folk festivals and...
Wow.
Seeing orgies and shit.
Really?
When we were...
Seven.
Crazy shit, man.
Orgies?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. Yeah. That's right. You know, so I have, you know, Parliament Funkadelic and the Barcades and the Commodores and Led Zeppelin and Iron Butterfly all in one dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my
well-rounded.
Yeah. Found out that my grandfather, my true natural grandfather, is a pure Choctaw Indian from Mississippi.
How'd you figure that out?
I met them in my early 30s.
You sought out your family?
Not really. My mother worked at HUD, saw the name. It happened to be her. Reunited with the family and found out that my grandfather was a pure Choctaw Indian from Mississippi. And naturally, my grandfather, was raised by my grandfather, is a cowboy from Wyoming. So I have a cowboy and an Indian as grandparents.
Yeah.
So I think my brother was a white gay male.
Really?
Who died of AIDS. Unfortunately, was an activist early in the early years when no one knew about it. So
this was your brother that you grew up with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I have a Native American grandfather, a cowboy grandfather, a gay white brother, a white sister.
What'd she do?
She actually was an electrician for a while. One of the first electricians in the area, DC area. And she's a parent now and raised her kids. Her first son is off to college.
Really? Already?
Yeah.
Did you meet your mom then? Your real mom?
I did.
And what was that like?
It was cool to get some closure, but I don't know her.
Right.
She wasn't there when I got stung by a bee or...
Right, but was she fucked up or no?
Kind of a Bible thumper kind of chick.
But did you ask her, like, why'd you put me in the garbage?
She did. She was an addict.
Right.
Out there. She was seeing an older guy.
Yeah.
Already had a family.
Uh-huh.
He already had a family. He was 50. She was 19.
Right.
He had four children by him. Anna, his own family.
She had four children by him?
Yeah. I was the fifth.
You were one of them?
Yeah. And she was 19 in Mississippi.
That's so fucking
crazy. And on drugs. So
she started having kids when she was 15?
Yeah. So she just left. And she just left me.
And she left him too.
And she's remorseful. I was never with him. I was with her.
Right.
And she left me, my older brother, and my three sisters alone. And then came back and got them and left me. So she was strung out.
Right. Did you ever meet the other siblings?
Yeah.
How are they?
My oldest brother's great. Great guy.
And you got a relationship with them
now?
Yeah,
I got a relationship with him. He remembers me. Him and my older sister remember me.
Hmm.
The other ones are like, wow, my brothers aren't in living color. So I was like, I don't want to get to know them.
But the other ones, and you still have a relationship with them?
I do.
How many kids do you have?
Four.
How old are they?
25, 21, 19, and 8.
Eight. Surprise?
Yeah.
That's it. Is that a different woman?
Yeah. She's a good girl, though.
How many wives have you had?
Three.
Three?
Not wives, but donors.
Did you used to, I think my buddy said, do you used to live next to Gilby Clark?
I did. He moved just over a couple of blocks. We're still best of friends.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Because I knew his, John Daniel. You know John Daniel?
I don't know John.
Gilby was in Candy.
Before Guns N' Roses.
Right, long before. John was the bass player in Candy. He's now a manager, and he's a friend of mine.
Oh, okay.
He said that.
Wow. He must have met me over there.
Right. He said.
So I was always over at the house when they had parties.
Right. He's got pool and shit. And,
oh, yeah. Gilby is my man. Gilby builds motorcycles and has fun with his life.
Yeah? And you guys are buddies?
Yeah, he does. He's a guitar playing motherfucker.
He is. He's great, man.
We're musical guys, and I met Slash through him. He was a good friend of mine. I got introduced to a real good consortium of good-ass L.A. musicians because of Gilby, man.
That's cool,
right? We played together.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you play?
My voice.
I know that, yeah.
That was Boston.
Yeah.
Or Peter Frampton. No, you feel. Like I do.
When did you start performing?
About 4 years out. That's why the black kids liked us.
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
Because you put on a show?
I can sing and dance.
Well, so you started musically, really?
Yeah. And music is my first love. Fell into comedy by accident.
What were you singing before?
Oh, yeah. Singing and trying to do that.
In with a band?
Bands. And
oh, yeah?
Band on the run.
You're playing, what kind of music, what kind of band were you
in? R&B.
Yeah?
R&B all the way.
Well, I remember you got pretty famous for the Al Jarreau impression.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, came to a club that I used to run called Tomedy, which was a music showcase in L.A.
Yeah.
Everybody came through. All the hot musicians came because we had a really hot room.
That was your place?
All my place.
Yeah.
Lovely place.
When was that?
That was probably about 2004.
What happened to that place?
I couldn't afford to keep it going. So I had real live music and I had real sound.
Yeah.
No one wants to pay for that.
Right.
Yeah. Give them one speaker and sell drinks. Yeah. That's the motto.
That's easy.
Yeah.
But so you had a good setup and
draining. Yeah, great. And he was sick in the hospital. And said, I'll come down to your show. I said, you want to perform? Nah, just watch. I said, okay, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
And boy, I got into this one tune. There is such a lonely, and I looked over, he was on the mic, on what? Cue.
Really?
Searching that's been going on.
Couldn't stop himself.
Pointed me, I went, sweet tomorrow morning. Burst in with the dawn. Boom, boom. He went, I delight in singing. Pointing at me. I go, how does Arrow knows the fawn? And then he points at me, and me and him, we both go, sweet tomorrow morning, burst in with dawn. And we brought the house down.
I bet.
Yeah.
Was that exciting?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Still gives me, you can feel it now.
Yeah, I can. Was he like a hero of yours?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
My brother, when I was 15, I was listening to a lot of R&B, and he said, I'm going to expand you.
Yeah.
There's more, you have more range.
Yeah.
You got to start listening to some jazz vocalists. And so he turned me on to, you know, him and Grover Washington. And,
right.
You know, Sanborn. And,
yeah.
You know, just Bob James. you know, Spyro Gyro.
Oh, wow. You know, yeah.
The Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, yeah.
Pat Metheny.
So did you?
So I'm gone now.
Yeah. Did you sing professionally?
I wish I did. I can say I did because I got paid gigs.
When you were a kid, though.
Yeah, when I was a kid.
Right.
And I went out with grown bands would come and knock on the door. Hey, can your son come and gig with us? You know.
Did that happen?
It did.
Like who?
It did. Just the local.
Oh yeah.
Guys that were playing Earth, Wind & Fire covers, and come over and say, "We hear your son can sing. Could he come to practice?" And she said, "Yeah, he can go over there for a little while." My brother walked me over there, and I'd get on that mic board. They say, "We got to take him out," you know. But I was too young to go to clubs.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So I wanted my mom to take me out and give me a record deal because I won every talent show. I was a sensation, really. Yeah. And sang just like Michael Jackson.
You could do that.
And she said, Michael, when he had a natural voice, right. He did something.
Yeah.
He started sounding like, you know, but he used to be a, when I had you, yeah. Treated me bad, you had a room, my dear. He had all this control.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's from that, you know.
Right.
I'm from that.
Right, Michael Jackson, yeah. Yeah.
Not looking out at the night. You know, not that one. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
The one, you know.
Right.
I'll be there. You know, the control, yeah.
Right.
And wanted her to, you know, because I saw they got mini bikes. They had the cartoon.
Sure.
The Jackson 5, you know, every Saturday.
Yeah.
I want to do this, man, because I can get a mini bike and wear bell bottoms. Man.
Yeah.
Get me some girls.
Uh-huh.
And my mother said, nope, I want you to spend time being a kid. And I said, yeah, but he gets a mini bike and he's still a kid. And she said this. She said, Michael Jackson's going to be fucked up.
She was right.
And I used to think she was crazy. I'm like, this woman is out of her mind. I can have us in a big house.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we got roaches. We're welfare. You know, I'm like, I can get us out of here.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, Michael's going to be fucked up. And we aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And he's here. He's gone and I'm here.
Did you ever meet him?
I did.
How was that for you?
He actually called me, not even knowing him. Called me out the blue.
For the impression? Because he...
No, called me. You must have seen me on In Living
right,
Color.
Right.
When he died, one of my agents said he was your favorite. He would email me all the time and say, where are you playing? And
oh, yeah?
I never told you. I said, why, motherfucker? And so he called me at this big, giant party at his house for 5,000 people, a concert. He said, you're the only comedian I trust to host it, and I hosted it.
Wow.
Met him.
Nice guy?
Nice dude.
Yeah.
Didn't pay for the limo. Thought that was weird. Said, something's wrong with that.
He did.
I took the limo, me and my 16-year-old, who was going out of her mind, took her all the way out to Santa Barbara from Sherman Oaks,
uh-huh,
and all the way back, stayed there all day, and he didn't pay for the limo.
That's bizarre.
And his assistant went, oh, I'm sorry, you don't understand, Michael doesn't do that.
Really?
I said, okay.
Really?
And I said, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
Something's off about that.
Well, yeah. That it's a policy?
Because isn't the guy, or the, and then that the We Are the World guy?
Yeah. And also, just the rich fucker who asked you to host the show.
Hosting, yeah, you know.
Did he pay you for that?
No.
Oh, just out of the goodness of your heart. It's Michael
and
Jackson.
I did do that.
Sure.
You know, and, you know, I thought that was a little odd and a little off.
Yeah.
But who am I to judge?
It's Michael Jackson.
Who am I to judge?
People have judged him for worse things than being cheap.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was, you know, he was coloring his skin and getting in an oxygen tank.
Yeah.
You know, I can only feel empathy.
Sure.
Not resentment.
Right.
I mean, who... You know,
yeah, he was a troubled man.
Yeah, I mean, we go and you know, we want these things in life, we think.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get them, and then we think, what, you know?
Is that it?
I mean, that's what the old black women say in church, you know. You better watch out what you pray for, because you just might get it. I'm like, what's wrong with getting it?
Yeah. And ain't enough.
And that's what they meant.
It's a weird thing when nothing will make you feel like you got it.
Hey, we all been there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't get no
certification. So when did you start doing comedy officially?
About 86.
Where?
D.C. was asked by a friend of mine to try comedy.
So you're like 23, 22?
No, I'm like 19. Something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I got a new job at the Ramada Inn, and I'm happy. And I call him. I'm an assistant chef.
Really? You're cooking?
At 19.
Cooking.
Yeah, that's great. I've been working in the kitchen since 15. That's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
At the Ramada Inn.
Where?
An assistant chef.
In D.C.?
In Maryland.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in Virginia.
Yeah.
that's a great gig.
Yeah.
And I called him, my best friend grew up with me. And the first thing he said was, you're stupid. I was like, what? He said, if I was like you and I was as funny as you, I'd be out there with Eddie Murphy and they're making movies.
Yeah.
I had no concept of what he was talking about, man. He's going, if they can do it, you can. And so he worked at a strip club. Worst strip club in D.C. Called me and said, I talked the manager into letting you on stage.
At the strip club?
Mm-hmm.
Was it the one above the comedy, next to the comedy place?
No, no, that's a better one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I discovered that one later.
Yeah.
Called me and said, won't you come
down?
We're
going to get you on stage at the strip club.
Yep.
That's the deal.
And I finally showed up after 3 months of, you know, nose. And the manager looks at me and says, is this him?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got 5 minutes, buddy. Looked at him and
in
said,
between
what?
Strippers?
Yeah.
That's old school.
Yeah. Yeah. He said, you got 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I said, cool. I turned to Howard. I said, what am I going to do? He said, I don't know, man. Just say something.
Yeah.
And from the first thing I said, they laughed.
Do you remember what it was?
Yeah. Yeah. He said, why don't you tell him about your house or your mom or something.
Right, right.
So I said, my mom used to make us, we had a lot of roaches.
Yeah.
And my mom said, if we have roaches because we don't clean the kitchen.
Right.
So she made us clean the kitchen all day Saturday and all day Sunday, which is the day we go out.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, Monday, we did not have any roaches in the kitchen.
Right.
But they were eating our couch. Yeah. Me and my sister came home from school.
Yeah.
And we're like, wow, finally the roaches are gone. And then we go to watch Speed Racer.
Right.
And pull up the couch pillows, and there's like a million roaches in there. So they just switched locations.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that was it. You were locked in.
On.
You felt it.
On. Stayed there for about 3 months.
At the strip
club. My reputation just soared.
And you're building a set.
I'm killing them.
Yeah.
Killing them.
Writing material.
Killing them.
Doing impressions.
All in the natch.
Yeah. So when did you start working?
Shortly after that.
Yeah.
Show promoters started coming to the club and putting me on huge concerts. So
like
I didn't play comedy clubs.
For? Yeah, yeah.
Evelyn Champagne King, group called Starpoint, Luther Vandross.
So you didn't do any clubs at the time? No. You because that was how a lot of guys started in the 70s.
For the first year.
Just opening, doing what, 10, 15? In front of a huge
band? Yeah, 10,000 people.
That's a notoriously difficult gig.
Not for me.
Yeah.
It was just natural for me. And then the clubs were even easier.
Well, you're hot. I haven't seen you in a while, but you go out with a lot of juice.
I give you what I got, man.
Yeah.
I'm like Molly, boy.
So how'd you get set up then? Did someone try to manage you? How'd you get?
Yeah. Met a guy while I was doing the Apollo contest, which was big, and it was actually a real talent show. The object of the game wasn't for the guy to pull you off stage.
Right.
It was to stay out there. And I won and I won and I won. And this guy approached me. He was an attorney. He said, I want to manage you. Why don't you go out to L.A. for a week? I'll set you up in the clubs in L.A. If you like it, we'll move out there. I'll manage. I said, okay.
He wasn't a manager, though.
No. No, just an attorney. But just love talent.
Right.
And so I went out to L.A. And for a week, I killed everyone.
Where'd you go?
Including Eddie Murphy and everybody else who got in my way.
Where'd you go?
Comedy Act Theater over in L.A., which was the mecca of black comedy.
Uh-huh.
Killed over there. Comedy Store. Killed. Ice House. Killed. I mean, everywhere.
Yeah.
Name it.
Improv. What year was that?
That was probably about 87.
Uh-huh.
Killed. Moved back here. And things slowed down.
Moved where? Back to East?
Moved back to L.A. Went back East. Came back out. Moved out here. And things slowed down. Tremendously.
But you hadn't done, so you were on the East Coast, you were opening for bands.
Got to L.A.
You went to the Apollo, and then the guy said, go out there, showcased. Then you go back, I'm moving out there. Then you moved out here.
I hit the clubs as much as you can every night.
So you just, like, you had all this fanfare, so you were loaded up. You're like, I'm going to be the guy.
Yeah.
And then you get out here, it's like, well, just get online. That kind of thing.
Yes.
And what clubs were you working?
Name them. Nobody would let me work. Ice House, you're not what we're looking for.
Store?
For 3 years.
Really? The Ice House wouldn't put you on?
Laugh Factory.
He put you on?
No.
Mitzi?
For 3 years.
Mitzi?
No.
You're not
what we're looking for.
No one put you on?
You're not what we're looking for.
Really? That's surprising.
We get a lot of work in the black clubs.
Okay.
I was like the, like Eddie Murphy on Eddie Murphy on steroids.
Yeah.
Back then.
Yeah.
I mean, even now.
Did you meet him?
Oh yeah.
Well, you worked with him, didn't you?
The first time I got in the Comedy Store, I worked with him.
Uh huh.
I got a call from the Comedy Store. I got a little, you know, shows at the Belly Room and little stuff for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got a call. Mitzi's got you working the main room tonight, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
Who am I with? Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy.
Wow.
So my first stint in the main room was with Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy. Richard either went on first and Eddie last, or Eddie first
and Richard last. I was a doorman there in 87, so Richard like had already burned himself up and was trying to come back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of? Just getting his feet back?
And Eddie was hottest.
Right.
And that's when Ben Stiller, Adam Sandler,
yeah,
Roseanne Barr, Seinfeld, Louis Anderson, Sam Kinison. This is before any of them hit.
Right. Oh,
they
yeah.
were all big dudes in the big room.
Well, these are people that were in the room when you did it, or that
they were doing the room. They were the main room people.
Right. Right.
Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
These are the main room cats, and I was a young cat.
Right.
Who got into the main room?
Right. I mean, and they saw you do it.
Steve Odekirk.
Sure.
Steve Odekirk. Jackson Purdue.
Jack Purdue, yeah.
Angel Salazar.
Sure. Check it out.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when did the big break happen? I mean, how'd that happen for you? I mean,
it wasn't like a, you know, just
because Keenan was there and Damon was there. They were both there.
A build up.
Did you see them at the store? I used to see them at the store all the time.
Keenan, yeah. All of them gave me the momentum for the break. It was Robert Townsend.
Oh yeah, he was there
too. Took me out of the Comedy Store.
Dom Irrera.
Dom.
Were you in Townsend's first movie?
No. I wasn't in I'ma Get You Sucker. I wasn't in Hollywood Shuffle, but I was at the premieres.
I
was an in dude.
Right.
You know? And
right.
Keenan and Robert knew me as the young, hot dude.
Right.
And so Robert put me on Partners in Crime, which was HBO.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time you were seeing Blacks do sketch since Richard Pryor's show back in 73.
How many did they do of those?
I think about 7 or 8, maybe 10.
So that was Robert Townsend's sketch show on HBO.
And I did stand
up. What happened to that dude, man?
He's around.
Is he?
Real smart guy, kind of a corporate cat, knows how to make money.
Really, what is he doing, smart. Though?
You know what? I don't know. I really don't. I think he's right now working with different networks, TV1.
Huh.
But he knows how to, he's smart, man.
Oh, I know, but like he was one of those guys that I haven't seen him in years, anywhere.
Yeah, but you know, he's behind the scenes.
Sure,
he's
man.
Like, you
sure.
Know,
well, so is Keenan, I guess, like, a bit, but he surfaces occasionally. Yeah. Keenan does.
Yeah, we don't know who the arms dealers are, but they're making money.
Sure, man. Good. I mean? I'm just happy he's like, making money.
They're in business.
Well, he got a lot of juice that the independent, like the big, the angle on that was I paid for this movie with credit cards, the Hollywood Shuffle, right?
Yeah.
That was the press angle.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. He got all these lines
of
credit.
You don't make it in Hollywood, you can always go to the post office.
With the Jerry Curl bit.
That's right.
That was funny.
Yeah. So out of that was my first national exposure as a comic.
On the
Robert
HBO.
Robert Townsend.
On the sketch show.
Yeah. And so that went so well that I actually appeared on the Arsenio Hall show.
I just watched the recent one on the Arsenio Hall show. 2013.
I sizzled that down. Yeah, I killed that.
Yeah. It was weird. I didn't watch any of those new shows. It's pretty wild, man.
Yeah.
To see, like, it's almost like a time warp.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Man, it was.
It's got the same haircut, but all right. So you do the Arsenio Hall show,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and that gave me the national TV exposure. So I got the cable exposure,
right?
TV. And then Sinbad put me on the road.
You were opening for Sinbad?
No, I was opening for Anita Baker and Luther Vandross. He couldn't do some dates, so I went on the road for 15 cities.
So doing the opening for music.
And I was already ready for that.
Right, right.
You know, and so from there, Eddie Murphy hooked me up with a pilot with his company. It didn't fly.
So were you and Eddie friends?
Yeah.
Are you still?
Yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah. He's the king.
Yeah.
He's the funniest dude ever.
I know.
He is the king. And from there, Keenan picked me up for Unliving Color.
Now, what was the pitch there? Because were all you guys writers on that? Was it a writer-performer situation?
Yeah, we wrote.
So he was just putting something together. He said, I'm putting a crew together to do this thing? Or did he have a deal in place? How did that go?
Yeah. I mean, he had a deal with Fox to do the TV show.
Right.
Put together an ensemble cast, which was us.
Yeah.
And he just was like Professor Xavier. He just went and got all the best assemble them in one team.
Right.
Put them in the danger room.
Right.
And turn them loose on the world, baby. And I'm Beast.
How long did that show run for? How many seasons?
5 years.
5 years. Had such a huge impact on everybody.
Still does.
Yeah. Do people still come up to you like, holy fuck.
Are you kidding me? It's the thing, man.
Yeah.
And any kids that are touched by the magic are like, oh my God, you're a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they got to be our age now, though. Isn't that weird, though, sometimes where people come up to you and they're like 40 or 50 years old? Really? They're like, I'm watching you when I was a kid.
Right.
And you're 40.
Right.
Like, how the fuck did that happen?
Well, you're 40 and you watched me as a kid. What does that make me?
What made it so, like, in terms of the writing and the process of Living Color, did Keenan sit everyone down and say, like, we're doing something different?
Yeah. And like, he said, get ready. And you can do it. He said, just watch. Hang on.
Because it was really the first, you know, black sketch show in a way that was mainstream, right?
Yeah. It was. It was. I mean, Richards didn't get a chance to fly.
Richards was trippy, dude. I've watched some of that recently.
Yeah, it didn't get a chance to fly.
Did you watch it recently? Have you watched it?
I studied that thing.
It's like some of that stuff was like...
It's got a lot of people. Paul Mooney's in that.
Oh, yeah. Argus is in it. Uncle Dirty's in there. Marshall Warfield's
Robin
in there.
Robin Williams is in it.
Sandra Bernhardt. All the old store people are in there.
Yeah, we're trying to come up, man. And all of them ended up being huge movie stars and TV stars.
It's wild to watch that stuff, though. I just read that biography of him.
They were out in the Comedy Store that long ago.
Yeah.
Since like 74.
Right. Right. All right. So what was the writing process? Because you worked a lot with you work with Jim, you work with Jamie, you work with all those guys. David Allen Greer. I mean,
we'd round table.
Yeah.
Pile up the best things for the week.
Yeah.
Decide by laughs and committee.
Yeah.
Closed door committee.
Mm-hmm.
Which sketches got on the air. We were hoping it was ours.
So everyone wrote their pieces.
We were hoping it was yours every week. It's like he was kind of like a newspaper editor.
Right.
And we were submitting articles.
Right. Showrunner, kind of. Exactly. Like, no, yes.
Exactly.
Well, you think he's funny? He's a funny guy, right?
He's brilliant.
It's always amazing to me.
He's the funniest dude. Keenan is like a different kind of funny, though.
Well, I used to watch him when I was a doorman. I'd see Keenan, I'd see Damon, and it was like two different things. Like, Keenan's a joke guy, and Damon was like
a brain guy. Keenan was like a joke brain guy,
right?
And Damon was like a funny guy.
Yeah, physical, man.
Like, let's do it.
Crazy.
Yeah.
He come into the main room, and I'm going, what are you going to do, your act? He goes, no, I'm going to do the jazz set tonight. And he didn't know what the fuck he was going to do.
Right.
And he would push the audience, man. He would.
Yeah, he's crazy as hell. They're a blessed group. They make you jealous.
There's a lot of them. What happened to her? What happened to Kim?
Kim's around.
Yeah?
Kim's around. Yeah, Kim is doing some, I think Kim is doing some plays last time I talked to her.
And is there like a third generation of Wayans?
There is. There is. Damon Jr. is doing movies. Craig is out there doing things. Damien is directing. You know, they're all out there. They're all doing something.
Now, I always want to believe that everyone's still kind of in touch. Do you, like, with Jamie Foxx, are you guys friends?
You know what? We're friends, but we don't see each other.
Right. Right. You know?
And we weren't
because you worked a lot together on the show, right?
Yeah. But we weren't friends then. Friends in the sense of I know you.
Right.
You know, me and Jim knew each other from the Comedy Store. So we have been friends for years.
Really?
Yeah. Now,
he was like, I forget that, like, you know, that he was just this young
guy. He's a great comic.
Oh, of course he was.
I just wish he'd do it.
I know. Well, why don't you call him?
Yeah, right.
I don't know what
I can call him, but I can't ask him that.
I don't know what he's doing up there. I'd love to talk to him. I have no
idea. Oh, my God. He's doing well.
Yeah?
He's doing well, yeah. He's doing really good. He's happy.
Yeah?
He's loving what he's doing. He's able to do sketches on Funny or Die or do put out whatever he wants. And
I saw this commencement speech he gave about a painting. Did you see that?
I didn't see it. I saw the hat.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I saw him in a graduation hat.
Uh-huh.
And just thought it was a sketch or something.
No. He really went out there and he did some comment. It was kind of trippy, man.
Yeah, he's a trippy dude.
Yeah. Was he always?
Always. I knew he was going to be a huge star.
So after Living Color, that's when you really took off as a stand-up and
yeah,
it was huge.
Well, the day it started.
Yeah.
The day it started, I mean, you know.
Everybody was
I was the first to star in a major motion picture, and I had...
Which one was that? CB... Which movie?
Strictly Business.
Okay.
Yes, CB4 came shortly after that.
Yeah.
But I did probably... I toured the country probably about 10 times.
Yeah.
I did seven movies.
Right, and a lot of the stand-up shows.
Yeah, I did...
Did you do special?
Yeah, I did...
Couple?
Three specials. All while doing In Living Color.
Right. You were huge, dude.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Big billboard on Sunset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. You lived it.
Lived it.
And what? And then what happened?
You know.
No, I don't know.
You know. Well, you know, you cycle out.
Yeah.
You know?
You do.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, someone gets hotter and takes the forefront, you know? I went through some personal things that were good for me.
Like what?
You know, I would say I you know, had some substance problems.
On and off for a while.
On and off for a while.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because I remember that.
And then found out that it wasn't about that at all.
What were you doing?
I won't say it. I'll just say substance.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And, but like, because I remember when we were touring that, you know, that people kind of knew that you were kind of strung out.
Going through some things.
Throwing some shit.
Going through some things.
Like, you didn't know what Tommy you were going to get. That thing. Yeah, like, Tommy showed up.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if he shows up, he'll kill.
Yeah. No matter what.
Yeah, I never did it on stage.
Right.
Yeah, but it was part of my forging process. And, you know, Mitzi told me, you know, I'm glad it happened early.
The substance stuff.
Yeah, I'm glad it happened early in your career.
Yeah.
That way you can deal with it. You don't have to wait till you're like in your 50s and like Richard and them.
Right.
You can get it and deal with it and have a life.
Did you?
Yeah.
Like, dude, I just read that book on Richard. I don't know how the fuck he even got anything.
Got a life. Got one. Dude,
you
got one. Got a life. You know, kids graduated from college. Yeah. Me, I'm the best I've ever been, the most potential I've ever had.
Well, what did you, when you say it wasn't about that, when this?
Oh, it was about me. It was about me knowing who I am and why I'm here.
And what process did you do to find that stuff?
Just in recovery.
Yeah.
In recovery. I have a lot of people that know about it that I connected with.
I got 15, 16 years.
Yeah, that taught me how.
Right.
That taught me how to stay clean and live happily.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it took.
Yeah.
It took.
How many times did it take? Took me a few.
Yeah, it took me a few.
Yeah,
more than 10.
Yeah.
Double digits. But, you know, my cousin told me one time, he said, you went to rehab, right? I said, yeah. He said, more than once, right? He said, yeah. I said, yeah. He said, then it didn't work. I said, no, it did work.
Yeah, finally.
Because if I didn't do it, I'd be out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, thank God I, you know, don't have to be with Farley and some other guys. I look back on that, and I never thought I'd say I'm happy that happened.
Sure.
But I'm happy that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, because look at me, man. I'm like 51, but 8. Years old, man.
Right.
Yeah, man. You can see it.
Get all like, yeah. Yes,
I'm
open.
I'm connected, bro.
Yeah.
Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
Silver Surfer can go from one universe to the other. He's bad. He's badass.
And do you have good relationship with all your kids and all your
great
their
yeah,
mothers?
The exit. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you were you ever did you like put together shit from your childhood? Did you ever
do
that shit?
Yeah, there was a lot, you know, there was a lot connected to that.
The abandonment.
None of
stuff.
It was the reason why I did it.
No, of course not. Right.
But I did see some of the contributing factors that would make me want to reach for something.
Right. Right.
Other than things that are already I already have.
Right.
Now I know what I have, so I don't need anything.
Yeah.
So I don't have to add anything to me. Because I'm complete.
Right. And you fucking always work, dude. You seem to work a lot.
I never stopped working.
Right.
Through the whole ordeal.
Right.
I never stopped working. Something in me wanted life and wanted to do this bad. And so, you know, I'd have a setback, come back and do something even greater on screen, something even greater in TV, something even greater in stand-up. I actually became a better performer as time went on. And I still don't think I've reached my peak.
What's the plan?
Today's good. Made it on over here. You know, we hit the traffic in time enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe able to sneak in a little nap. You know, I still got some chicken left from Ralph's.
Do you, when you perform though, like, do you do Vegas? Do you do, where do you do?
I'm around the country.
Yeah.
I do clubs around the country, concerts around the country, and I do venues around the world. So I've been traveling.
You do international?
International.
Like
I've been
what?
Traveling the world.
Like, where do you go?
Just came from Kuwait.
How was that? I know that a lot of people go down the Emirates and whatnot. Really?
Wonderful.
What kind of stand crowd?
Stand up.
Yeah.
Great young Kuwaiti, you know, Kuwaiti American friendly crowd.
And they remember you? They know you?
Killed.
Yeah.
Third time there.
Really?
Egypt, Japan.
Egypt.
Korea.
Yeah.
Singapore. the Philippines, Kurdistan.
Really?
India.
And where do you, where most of these shows take place?
Military bases.
Oh.
Alaska, the North Pole.
So you're doing, you perform for the troops?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I went into the red zone. I went to Afghanistan 4 times.
Really? And they love it, right? Very appreciative.
Loving it.
What do you do mostly for that show?
What I do.
Yeah.
They love it. They're waiting on me.
Yeah.
I've been able to do some good things. I was in one base in Bagram, I believe.
Yeah.
And three of the, our boys were shot on the outside of the base, not far from where I was staying, actually. And one died. One's spine was severed, and one lost his foot. So they knock on my door in early in the morning. All the brass is out front. I'm going, Jesus, I think they got a helicopter. They better have a helicopter out there.
Yeah.
And they said, would you come and say hello to the young man that lost his foot? And this is one of the reasons I found out why I'm doing what I'm doing. That's why I'm glad what happened happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm walking over there going, what am I going to say to this kid? You know? So I did my little prayer. Just show me what I need to do here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about everybody peeled off as I was walking towards the curtain that surrounded the bed. You know?
Right.
It was just me.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, they really want me to do this by myself.
Yeah.
So I peel back the curtains, and the kid is like kind of asleep. He wakes up and sits up and go and smiles, man, and goes, what are you doing here? And I said, I was about to ask you the same thing.
Yeah.
We talked for an hour.
Really?
And it was a cinch.
Yeah. You just needed to show up.
Yeah.
That's sweet, man. Mm-hmm. Were you always a religious person?
No. No, my mom was a staunch atheist, man. So I never had that. Because she was that.
A, what, really staunch
kind of a hippie. Kind of a hippie.
Uh-huh.
Kind of, you know. You know, leftist, revolutionary, you know.
What religion was she?
None.
None?
None.
Not brought up with any.
She believed that was the opium of the masses.
Right.
Which it has been used as.
Of course. No, that. I get it. But, yeah. but in terms of when you kind of get grooved into a,
yeah,
you know, day at a time business.
Right.
There's a...
Well, you know, she was a spiritual person.
Right.
And that was the difference,
yeah,
between a religious person. And I found that I'm a spiritual person.
Sure.
And I accept religious principles.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Be good to other people.
Yeah. Everybody got it.
You know what I mean?
The part where I got to kill you because you believe that.
Yeah.
I don't think JC or Allah said that one.
Right.
That was man's interpretation. Plus, you know, God is man's interpretation.
It's all, yeah, it's all.
I mean, it took a man to tell another man that exists anyway. For as far as we know, God never came down and said, hey, here I am.
Someone made it up to give us all purpose.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
God could be a Puerto Rican woman drinking green whiskey. Don't know.
That would be very exciting to find that out.
You know, but we have faith. You know, faith is different.
So what about all your kids? Are they you guys all get along? What are they doing? Anyone in show business?
They're great. My daughter Jillian.
Yeah.
She's giving it a shot. She's starting to audition and
acting?
She's into the acting thing. So
how's that going for her?
I mean, not so good.
Yeah.
She gotta get a job.
Yeah. Well, what do you tell her?
It doesn't work unless you have a job.
Right. Well, what do you tell her about show business? I mean, I don't know. Obviously you can't say don't do it.
All I can say is, you know,
it's hard.
I can say the things that I learned that work.
Which are?
Work hard and don't give up. Find a way to make a good living. Embrace your life.
Right.
And commit.
Yeah.
And give everything you got every time. That's my recipe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what she's going to take?
You know what I hope?
What are the other ones interested in? Not the A-World.
One's a DJ downtown. LA.
Oh, yeah?
He's in the DJ world, 19-year-old.
Uh-huh. You know? Having a good time? Good
having
kid?
A good, too good of a time. I want him to get a job. My other son's autistic.
Uh-huh.
Doing well.
At what level? What does that mean?
He's functioning.
Uh-huh.
Adult. He's graduated from high school.
Uh-huh.
Now has a job, and he's taking care of himself. So, you know,
yeah.
Autism is one of those things that's hard to understand, and it's difficult on parents, but it's like anything else. You know, you see people with no legs running the Olympics, so.
Yeah. So that must have been a challenge?
Challenge.
Him. Yeah.
Real challenge, especially since not being with the mom.
Uh-huh. Because you're not with the mom.
Right. So not being able to be there every day and understand that.
Right.
I've got to just keep faith about the relationship, and it's there. As long as I do my part and love like my mom loved me, I know everything's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have that with all the kids.
All of them.
And the 8-year-old is in your house now.
No, she lives in San Jose.
Oh, my God. You don't hold on to any of the women.
Yeah, but I see her.
Okay.
All the time. All the time.
You got no woman right now?
I do have a woman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it good?
Yeah.
It's good.
It's good. Yeah, it's good.
But not those three.
Those three. Yeah, today's good. A day at a time, bro.
I know, man. Look, I'm glad you stopped by. I'm glad we had the conversation.
You don't get this a lot.
What, to have the long talk?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's all automated.
Yeah, I know.
The music.
I'll quit. What do you got going? Where are you going to be?
The music programs.
Yeah, do that thing.
Yeah, there's not a real resident DJ. It's a guy.
Uh-huh.
That's just kind of like a technician.
Yeah, no.
And you're up out of there.
Yeah.
The satellite.
We're going to do 4 minutes. What do you want me to set you up for?
Hey, thank you, man.
Yeah, yeah. Great.
And now, Saturday special. Don't forget to be a part of the magic and part of the happening at the improv this week. You know.
Yeah, that's it. Well, it's great talking to you, man. I'm glad you're doing well.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Good for you. You got what I got.
Well, there you go. That was Tommy Davidson. This is me, Mark Maron. Go to WTFpod.com for all your WTF Pod needs. Get on the mailing list. I'll email you every week, every Sunday. Go to WTFpod.com/calendar. Check those dates because I'm coming near you. Cleveland, Chicago, Minneapolis, New Jersey, New York, Portland. It's all happening. Denver. I got the Buddha out here. The Buddha being the Gibson ES-335. The Buddha.